Thank you. Would the marshal please call the case?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Wilkie, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The first case this morning is A21-1660, In Re Welfare of the Child of KMARL and PSK.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. This will proceed as though we were in person, even though we're on Zoom. So each side will have 15 minutes. I understand that respondents are splitting their time equally. Is that correct? And the marshal will put your time up. You'll be able to see the clock. If at any time we fall off because of technology, we'll stop. Just let us know if you can't hear or something's happening so that we can stop the clock and make sure that you have all the time that you need. This is being recorded, so state your name at the beginning of each time that you start to speak. And with that, I think we're ready to begin. Is the appellant ready to begin?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may start then.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Schabel with Grindy and Dickey Law Firm, and we represent appellants initialed T.E. and K.E., who are relatives of the Indian child in the underlying adoption proceeding in accordance with the laws and customs of the Lower Sioux Indian community. May it please the court. This is the policy of this state to ensure that the best interests of a child are given paramount consideration in proceedings involving an adoptive placement of a child. And in the case of an Indian child, like here, the best interests of the child must be determined consistent with the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act, as well as the Indian Child Welfare Act. Under these acts, an Indian child may be placed outside of the order of placement preferences with a non-relative individual, but only if the court determines there is good cause to do so. And this good cause analysis must be considered by looking at the best interests of the child, which are interwoven with the best interests of the tribe, and whether active efforts were provided to relatives who are preferred under the placement preferences of MIFBA and ICWA, to use shorthand. In this case, the district court in Olmsted County Health, Housing, and Human Services failed to promote the child's best interest because they failed to give sufficient preference to TE and KE. And Olmsted County failed to make active efforts to place the child with TE and KE. Now, Olmsted County, is our position that Olmsted County acted unreasonably when the county refused to acknowledge TE and KE's relative status to the child and refused to consider them as the preferred placement option. Olmsted County acted unreasonably when...
So, Ms. Schabel... I have a couple of questions, and I know that we defer, and I do believe that the district court deferred to the tribe's qualified expert who said that your clients were relatives. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, the district court did acknowledge the tribe's expert, but Olmsted County consistently in their petitions to the court for the petition to transfer legal and physical custody, the petition to terminate parental rights, they repeatedly did not acknowledge TE and KE's relative status. And so that informed all of their decision making throughout this proceeding. And they did not.
The court's order, the court recognized your clients as relatives, but then moved on to whether or not there was good cause to deviate from the preference. That's my reading of the order. Am I wrong in that reading?
Your Honor is correct. The district court did see that, or did recognize that TE and KE were relatives. The district court did make a good cause deviation, but it's our position that the way the court reached that decision was not the correct procedure. There was never any evidentiary hearing at the district court stage, despite repeated requests by the Lower Sioux tribe, as well as TE and KE, for a hearing so that there could be a serious consideration of TE and KE as an adoptive placement. When the district court made its good cause findings, those findings were based on the mother's preference and the bonding that had occurred with the foster family.
Judge Riley, I need to interrupt. There was something in the chat from Deb Broher who says she can't hear the attorney. I don't know if that's still true.
Yes, Your Honor, I did raise my hand and type in the chat. The sound is back now. I'm not sure what happened, but I can hear again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Judge Werke. And I think the clerk stopped, or the marshal stopped the clock, so you may proceed.
Thank you. Now, is that our position that a parent's preference should not be considered? That is certainly something that is worth consideration in these proceedings. But it is our position that a mother's preference should be one of many factors to consider. And in the district court's December 2021 order, the district court relied on the mother's preference, did not look at TE and KE as individuals, as a potential adoptive placement. And the reason why the district court could not make findings about what adoptive placement would look like with them is because there was never any evidentiary hearing. There was never any effort by Olmsted County to seriously consider TE and KE as an adoptive placement. So there was just no information before the court to say, this is what adoptive placement would look like with a foster family. This is what adoptive placement would look like with TE and KE. And if you look at the cases that Mr. Fiddler cited in his brief, where district courts have considered parental preference, have looked at bonding to support their decisions for a good cause deviation, and it's not always clear, but my take on those opinions is that there was some kind of meaningful consideration at the district court level, whether that be an evidentiary hearing or something else, but there was a comparison between competing petitions by relatives and non-relatives. And that's the issue in this case.
So are you aware of any cases that have said that mother's preference does not constitute good cause?
No. And in the cases that I've seen, parental preference is considered in addition to a number of other factors to support a deviation. Again, the issue here is the way the district court reached its decision. The TE and KE and the Lower Sioux tribe made many, many requests of the district court for there to be an evidentiary hearing, for there to be a contested hearing about placing the child with TE and KE.
Can I just ask as a practical matter, counsel, when I look at this, when I look at MIFPA 26771 subdivision 7B, listing the good cause factors for the district court to consider, can you explain to me how an evidentiary hearing would inform any of those factors? Because I'm not really understanding what the purpose of the evidentiary hearing would be.
The purpose of the evidentiary hearing would be an opportunity for the district court to go through the best interest factors that are outlined in, 260C.212 subdivision 2, and look at the two different families, make those similar to a dissolution proceeding. You look at the best interest analysis, you look at the two different families and what they can provide.
I understand that, but we're talking about, I think you're saying that the district court erred in finding good cause to deviate from the preference. I mean, I'm assuming that this child is an Indian child. That's the district court's finding. I think that's supported by the record. I can't speak on behalf of my colleagues, but that's my presumption here. The question for me is whether the district court had good cause within the meaning of MIFPA to deviate from the preference. And the district court made a finding under number one that the mom of the child, the birth mother of the child, requested that the child be placed outside of the tribe, that the second one isn't a relevant consideration because of the age of the child. And then I'm just not understanding how an evidentiary hearing informs factors 3 and 4 under the statute. If you could comment on that, that would be helpful.
Sure. I'm looking at 3 and 4 now. So I think if you look at 4, the social services agency here, Olmsted County, would need to say that the diligent search has been conducted that did not locate any available suitable families for the child that meet the placement preference criteria. And if you look down to section F, it notes that good cause finding must consider whether active efforts were provided to extended families. And it's our position that if Olmsted County had more seriously considered TE and KE from the beginning as the preferred adoptive placement, had inquired about the suitability of their placement preference, then they could have presented information to the district court and made a determination, TE and KE are not suitable because the foster family is better for the child because we don't have that information.
Ms. Schaible, you know, the reason we have these cases and the importance of these hearings are because of the policies behind ICWA, which we're all aware of. And it's notable in this case that the judge said that the adoption that was going through here didn't implicate the issues that the policy behind the issues. Mother's not a member of the tribe, nor are the appellants. Tell me how the ICWA principles and the policies, how is that even implicated?
So under ICWA and under MIFPA, Minnesota particularly takes a broad look at who an Indian child is. And the Lower Sioux Indian community, if you look at the declarations from Ariel, Audi.
But I guess what I'm getting at is how are the policies even violated? I mean, what is the tribes haven't become involved in this case. And I can't think of the word I'm looking for. There's somewhat of a distance type tree, if you will, as far as relative status. So I'm not diminishing the importance of this case as it relates to an ICWA, but what is the most egregious thing that you can tell us in connection with your position on behalf of your clients that would support sending this back to the trial court?
Your Honor, I would say, looking at the family tree, it looks like it's a long distant relationship, but Indian communities view family differently. TE and KE are considered aunties, an uncle to the child under the laws and customs of the Lower Sioux, as well as the TE's native Cambodian heritage. It feels very close to them. And so here they are relatives to this child, and yet they have been denied the opportunity. They have been denied serious consideration for a placement. In other cases, generally speaking, Minnesota looks to relatives and gives relatives an opportunity to be considered, and here TE and KE were denied. The fact that the family tree looks long and wide and far away, you know, again, the standards are the standards of the lower Sioux. They consider this to be a close family relationship, and the courts must defer to the lower Sioux in their determination of the strength of this family relationship. And what TE and KE are requesting from this court is that this case is remanded to the district court so that an evidentiary hearing can be held after Olmsted County is required to take appropriate action, make active efforts to consider TE and KE as an adoptive placement. This is important not just for this case, but as a reminder to the district court and to Olmsted County that when there is a relative, when there is an Indian child involved, you can't just look to the mother's preference and make a determination that placement decision has been solved. There must be a serious consideration of the Indian child's family so that an apples to apples comparison can be made between the, in this case, the foster family and TE and KE. If the decision is to choose the mother, to defer to the mother's preference, well, let that be supported by findings showing the suitability of both homes and what they can provide to the child. Thank you.
Thank you. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Which of the respondents' attorneys is going first?
That would be me, Your Honor.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Deb Grayler, and I represent Olmsted County Health, Housing, and Human Services, who are one of the respondents in this proceeding. Your Honors, a lot has been stated about the county's refusal to appropriately consider the appellants for placement. This issue has been litigated since 2019. And at that time, when the tribe indicated that they wanted the child to be moved to the appellant's home, the county was prepared to make that transition, had a transition plan as directed by the court. And then the mother came in at that point and asked that that be halted and objected to the child being moved. The tribe has been involved since the very beginning of this case, and the county has made active efforts to engage them and was again prepared to move the child to their preferred placement. The court ordered the county to halt those efforts, and the mother articulated her preference that the placement preferences under the Indian Child Welfare Act, that there be a deviation from those placement preferences. The mother has the right to do that. She had developed a relationship with the foster family. The foster family had had coordinated visits for the child with mother's other children and extended family.
But of course, that's not sufficient in and of itself. I mean, there has to be a reason to deviate. I'm going to ask the same question to you that I did to Ms. Schaible, and that's the fact that the judge in this case talked about the ICWA requirements and said there's so given, he said, this is more particularly so given that the harm intended to be avoided by ICWA is inapplicable to the facts of this case. And in when he said that, he's just kind of saying the protections policies aren't being affected. Ms. Schaible is saying, you know, that's why we need to watch all of these instances, because when we start saying this case is an exception, that case is an exception, that case is an exception, we've pretty much eroded the entire basis of that. So what's your response to that, that these are cases that we need to sit up and pay attention to and not just sweep under the rug and say, well, we have a mother's preference and we don't need to worry about the ICWA provisions or the policy?
I certainly believe that the Indian Child Welfare Act is something that is important, and obviously the county has made great efforts in this case to comply with it. But I would agree with the judge here that the reasoning behind the development of the Indian Child Welfare Act does not apply here in a situation where the mother is not a member of the tribe, has not had involvement with the tribe. The child has been determined to be eligible, but mother has a right to have a voice in this proceeding. She does not want the tribe's preferred placement to be the parents for her child, and she has a right to articulate that. And it's founded in what is in the best interest of the child, which is the overarching principle that we have to take into consideration in these cases. In this case, it is in the child's best interest to remain with the foster parents. That's been established over time. The guardian ad litem agrees with that placement. They have demonstrated a willingness to have a connection to mother's other children. And they've also demonstrated an interest and a willingness to make connections for the child with the tribe. They've done that. And
I think that that's Ms. Schabel's objection, really. And that is, yes, there was all kinds of evidence and testimony that was provided that support a best interest findings in favor of the district court's ultimate decision, but the appellants did not have an opportunity to test that evidence through an evidentiary hearing or present their own, which would provide competing information about the best interest factors. Do you want to address that, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. I think even outside of ICWA, our statutes provide a consideration or a basis for a parent to request that relatives not be considered for placement. And so there's a consent to adopt here. The only person eligible to adopt the child is the foster parents based on that consent to adopt, which has been accepted by the court and was not appealed by anyone. So here we are, you know, almost a year later, and this child is still lingering in foster care. I certainly understand that appellants wanted to be able to present, you know, their side of the case and why the child should be placed with them. But again, this issue has been litigated since 2019 when parties were present, when that transition plan was beginning, and then it was halted by the court because it was believed that it was not in the best interest of the child. And so here we are 2 years later, still litigating this same issue. And again, the mother has the right inside of and—
Ms. Grayler?
Yes.
I was unable to find a case where you have this, the consent to adopt by a parent and the overlay or the underlay, the foundation of ICWA and MIFBA. Are you familiar with any cases where there is this consent to adopt by a parent, which does not, where the her consent is to a family who is not the preference of the tribe? And how does that inform our analysis?
I'm not aware of a case off the top of my head, but the statute regarding consent to adopt clearly implicates ICWA, references ICWA under 260C.515. Subdivision 3, I believe it's subsection 9. So clearly consents to adopt are allowed under ICWA, and it's specifically noted in the statute. And I believe that the case, adoptive couple and baby girl case in the United States Supreme Court clearly indicated that a mother can articulate her preference for a non-tribal supported placement. The mother has that right, and that right should be strongly considered. I believe my time is almost up. So with that, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fidler. Let's wait for the clock to be reset. May proceed. You're muted.
I think I would have learned that by now. May it please the court, my name is Mark Fidler. I represent the birth mother in this case. Your Honors, we would ask that the Court of Appeals affirm the district court's holding. We believe it's based on solid law, case law, statutes, ICWA and MIFPA. starting with the good cause analysis that the court's been talking about. Good cause has been a factor for deviation from the inception of ICWA. The original Bureau of Indian Affairs guidelines, which weren't binding, established parental preference as one of the good cause factors. In 1994, the Minnesota Supreme Court in the SEG case said that those Bureau of Indian Affairs guidelines were mandatory in the courts in Minnesota. And those guidelines expressly allow for good cause to be based on parental preference. Subsequently, just a few years ago in 2016, the Bureau of Indian Affairs codified binding federal guidelines in the CFRs. And they too established parental preference as good cause to deviate. And it's interesting, the theoretical legal justification for that was based on the parents' constitutional rights. And the BIA cited the case of Troxell versus Granville from Washington State. And it's a really interesting analog to this case because in Troxell, you had a case where, like here, third parties were intervening in the private domain of the parent, you know, where the parent was wanting to make a placement about for the child and what she thought was the child's best interests. And Justice Kennedy said, held for the court, that that was a substantive due process liberty interest and that third parties can't come in and override and trample that parent's expression of choice. And so the BIA recognized that, and that's why the Indian parents' rights are so powerful under ICWA and under MIFPA. So as Ms. Grayler acknowledged, the legislature understood that the parents' consent rights were different under ICWA. So she has the right to this day, even on remand, she would have the right to revoke her consent, force either a trial, involuntary termination trial, transfer legal custody, some other permanency proceeding. But what the court did was said, I'm not going to make the mother run through that gauntlet, put her through that when she has a good cause right to state a preference. And it is so profound and it can't be overstated. If you look at Troxell and then subsequent to that, the Suhu, what's the name of it? It's Suhu, it's a Minnesota Supreme Court. They followed up on Troxell and said that the test for overriding parents' preference is, does the statute, does the law presume that the parents' preferences are correct? And, you know, the judge, district court below didn't simply say, okay, yeah, you said that, I'm going with it. I'm good with that. I'm good with those preferences. Even though he was entitled to apply a presumption of correctness, we had a very detailed consent hearing. The Lower Sioux community was present at that hearing, and we literally went over the consent with word by word, and my client testified. She testified about her relationship with the foster parents, the openness, how the adoption was going to be open, and, you know, there was nothing in the record that would indicate any grounds to overcome that powerful presumption of correctness to the birth parent's decision. I'd also reiterate that 1915 does not apply in any case, because under adoptive couple versus baby girl, the United States Supreme Court held that the preferences only apply when there are competing petitioners who are eligible to be considered before the court. And like any adoption situation, and I do countless ICWA adoptions, I've done some before Judge Riley, I believe, you know, the parents control the case, and, you know, they consent to only one party and nobody else has standing. And our consent to adopt statute vindicates that 100%. It says nobody else is eligible. Nobody's eligible. I even looked up eligible as if it wasn't clear. It's eligible. Nobody else has a privilege to to intervene and overcome and trample on her rights to make a preference. So that's it. So the case, I think, is easily addressed on standing grounds alone, that there's no standing to even evoke the preferences under adoptive couple versus baby girl. And in my brief, I cite numerous cases in other appellate courts that follow that line of reasoning on the applicability of the preferences. I don't have a lot to add, but also I wanted to make one observation. We had that detailed consent hearing over a year ago, and basically it said, oh, nobody else can adopt, the appellants.
Mr. Fidler, here's a distinction from some of the cases that you cite. The appellants expressed an interest in adopting this child before your client signed the consent to adopt, as I understand the procedural history. Is that true?
That is true.
And so it seems like they would have been eligible prior to the consent being signed.
No, because under, respectfully, Your Honor, under adoptive couple, the case says eligible doesn't mean just do you meet the preferences. Eligible means you have to formally be able to adopt. And so they wanted to adopt and they had no consent. They didn't have the standing to adopt. And in any case, the framework did change. So it was a foster care good cause finding. And the judge below did not rely just on that. He reiterated good cause at subsequent steps. For all those reasons, Your Honors, we'd ask that the court affirm the district court below and find that the consent to adopt is valid. And also just one last point, I think there's a serious issue about jurisdiction under Minnesota Rule of Appellate Procedure 103.03. When the judge accepted the consent to adopt, it determined the action as to the appellants. They did not appeal. I think there's a serious question about jurisdiction. I wish I had realized that earlier, but it's my duty to bring it up to the court. So thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Schaible. Let's get the clock up and running and then you can begin your rebuttal. You may proceed.
Thank you. There are a couple of points I wish to bring to the court's attention. One, briefly, again, you've heard about the mother's preference over and over again. Father did also express a preference. His was totally dismissed. Second, mother's preference, based in large part because of her relationship with the foster family. And there is evidence in the record in KE's affidavits that the foster family interfered with TE and KE's relationship with the mother. The foster family encouraged TE and KE not to reach out to the mother. She was an unsafe person at the same time that they were establishing a relationship with a mother, something that could have been further addressed in an evidentiary hearing. And then third, to this point about eligibility, the consent hearing. During the consent hearing, that is when TE and KE's motions to intervene, to request consideration as the adoptive placement, they were pending before the court. The lower Sioux had made many attempts to get the evidentiary hearing prior to the consent hearing, but the county was well aware that TE and KE were interested. Under the rules, TE and KE, they couldn't file a petition for adoption prior to the child being eligible for adoption, for there to be a termination of parental rights, for there to be a guardianship through the commissioner. So they couldn't request to adopt previously. They'd certainly may know that they wanted to be considered the adoptive placement. And at the consent hearing, there's only so much that the TE and KE could have presented to the court while a consent hearing is going on. And this is the first time they're there before the court to formally come forward and request consideration as the adoptive placement. The court witnessed the consent to adopt before even ruling on TE and KE's motion to intervene and to request consideration. After the child was became a guardian of the commissioner, TE and KE came forward, formally came forward to request consideration. Again, there's very specific procedural requirements to move forward. TE and KE did the best within the rules to make themselves known and to be heard. Because they weren't a party at the time, their ability to address and appeal the consent to adopt was implicated. And it's our position that the district court in Olmsted County, they moved forward with a consent to adopt in violation of ICWA because active efforts had not been made to consider placement with TE and KE. Again, if you look at the process that happened to the district court, and I realize it's not easy to look, there's a lot of things happening, but if district court and Olmsted County had simply paused, given TE and KE serious consideration, held that evidentiary hearing, then we may not be in this position today because there could have been a fair comparison between the foster family and TE and KE about who could meet the child's best interests. Unfortunately, that did not happen. TE and KE tried time and time again, and they were denied the opportunity to present their fair case. And so they ask this court to again remand this case, allow there to be that fair consideration, and to remind the district court and Olmsted County that you can't just look at a parent's preference. You have to look deeper than that. It's the child's best interests that are of paramount consideration. And that means giving a fair look to a foster family, to a relative, to whoever is interested in providing for the child. Take a serious look, then have a fair comparison, whatever that may be. So we respectfully request that this court remand this case to the district court with instructions for the Olmsted County to investigate the suitability of TE and KE, and an evidentiary hearing be held so that a fair comparison can be made and written findings on the best interests can be issued by the court. Thank you.
Thank you all for your arguments and your briefing. It's a really interesting case, and your briefs and your arguments have helped, are helping us to make our decision, and we will have it out within the statutory time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.